Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future, living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow line dance song.
Hey, Sign Guy Nation, welcome to the show here on another Friday afternoon. Sign Guy with you as usual. Some show notes really fast before we jump in with our guest. If you're looking for some wrestling, tonight, WCWO at the Outlaw Arena in Indianapolis, Indiana. FGW in Hamilton, Ohio. Power Pit Pro Wrestling in Roseburg, Oregon. MAPW's 6th anniversary show in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And you can find me later this evening for Northwest Pro at South Hill, Washington, at the KEI Martial Arts Center. Tomorrow night, LBW in Lubbock, Texas. You can find me back with Northwest Pro tomorrow night at the Vaughn, Washington, Key Peninsula Civic Center, ICW in Chattanooga, Tennessee, TCW in Jeffersonville, Indiana, PPW in Bedford, Indiana, Supreme in Madison, Indiana, MICW in Salem, Indiana, PWK in Argos, Indiana, UCW in Saginaw, Michigan, TIWF in Trenton, Tennessee, NWF in Mount Orb, Ohio, Wrestle Club in Caldwell, Idaho, CWA in Nottingham, Pennsylvania, ICW in Schenectady, New Jersey, New Era Wrestling having a benefit show for the Boys and Girls Club in Shelbyville, Indiana, TWF in Tracy, California, SWO in Seven Valleys, Pennsylvania, and IZW in Tempe, Arizona tomorrow. Without any further ado, though, I want to welcome our guest to the show, someone I am very much looking forward to having on this afternoon. He is the original Lord Humongous, Jeff Van Camp. Thank you so much for being here. Pleasure to have you on the show.
Hey, thank you. It is a great pleasure to be on your program. Thank you for the invite.
Oh, our pleasure for sure. Now, since it is your first time with us, I will lead you off with our traditional first-timer question. What got you into the world of professional wrestling?
Well, actually, I got into wrestling. I was playing football for University of Louisville, and I'm originally from New Albany, Indiana. And I was working wrestling every Tuesday night at Louisville Gardens. And I just got to happen to know the wrestlers and Jerry Lawler. And he told me after I got done playing college football to join him and be a professional wrestler. That was my first time ever actually being around the boys. That was early 1980, 81, 82, after college football, went into wrestling, and Jerry Lawler in Memphis, Tennessee, right there in 1983. Been a long time.
Now, like you said, being that you were from New Albany and you played at the University of Louisville, that was prime Memphis territory in that era. There was a lot of wrestling in that area for the Memphis territory. New Albany to this day has a very strong independent wrestling presence, and Louisville is home of OVW, which is one of your bigger independents. Do you think coming out of a wrestling-rich area like you did maybe helped you make that transition when you started out, or do you think that if you were from any other area, being your size, you would have had the same experience?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I played ball at Louisville, and I just got to know the wrestlers. I was at the right time at the right place. Right place at the right time, and the guys got to know who I was, and they invited me to be a wrestler, and they invited me, and Jerry Lawler said, well, why don't you come on down to Mid-South Coliseum on one Saturday morning. I'll be there, you know, talk about Jerry Lawler, and he'll show me how to wrestle. And at the time, me and my buddy and I, his name was Pete Bowen, he was an offensive tackle for the University of Louisville, and we were supposed to go down together. Well, at the last minute, Pete decided he didn't want to go, and so my brother went. And my brother's a big guy, too. He's about 6'2", 250 pounds. And so we drove to Memphis, Tennessee, and went to the Mid-South Coliseum, and Jerry was actually – he was there waiting for us. And I got in the ring for about 3 hours with Jerry. He showed me the ropes a little bit. And my brother got up in the ring, did what he had to do, and he said, you know, this is really not for me, because in front of all these thousands of people wearing shorts, you know, a bathing suit, tights, he was scared to death. So he said at the last minute he didn't want to do it. And I just kind of like I got a mechanism I normally turn on and off playing ball, you know. I wrestled a little bit in high school, and I was on the track doing throwing shot put, and I did playing football, you just kind of turn off what's going on around you, and you just play your sport, and that's what I did with Jerry Lawler. And at the end of the day, mid Saturday, Jerry hand me a booking sheet and said, okay, Jeff, you're now a professional wrestler. Here's your dates and times and the cities you need to be at. I was like, what? I was shocked.
Now, several years after you did this, there was another football player from the University of Louisville that made the transition into professional wrestling. He had short of a small amount of time in the business, comparatively speaking, much like yourself. So I see the parallels. He was also kind of a taller guy, that being Eric Watts. I know you worked for his father. Did you ever talk about University of Louisville as being an option for Eric? Did you factor into his decision to go there in any way, or was it just a coincidence that your paths sort of took a similar journey?
You know, that's a good question. I actually didn't know Eric Watts at the time, and our paths never crossed during my first into going into the ring being a professional wrestler. I was just kind of like I was just thrown out there. Honestly, that's the first I heard that he played at Louisville as well, and kudos to him.
Yeah, he definitely did. It would have been like the tail end of the 80s, early 90s that he was there, but he was the starting quarterback before he joined essentially the family business.
I didn't know Mr. Watts at the time.
Oh, okay. That would make sense then. When you left the Memphis territory, you went north a bit into Dick the Bruiser's territory, which was Indianapolis and the surrounding areas. You got the team with Dick the Bruiser, which is going to give anyone instant credibility, because Dick the Bruiser, in a lot of fans' eyes, was wrestling, if you were a fan in that time frame in the state of Indiana. What was it like being the partner of someone that was that beloved in the territory?
You know, sir, Jason, I appreciate you saying that. I was very humbled. You know, when I first got, you know, after I left the Memphis territory, Jerry said pretty much to me that it was time for me to expand my horizons and go off and explore and be a wrestler in a different territory. So I went to Indianapolis and got with Dick the Bruiser, What a great guy. I can't say enough wonderful things about him. He taught me a whole lot. You know, there was a lot of great individuals there, Jerry Valiant, Bobo Brazil, Abdullah the Butcher. Brody was there. I mean, there was so much talent in this area when I was first there. It was like I was a sponge, absorbing. And that's the thing that a lot of guys nowadays don't understand. You have to keep your mouth closed in the dressing room and just listen to how to work an audience and how to work the ring and work with one another. And that's what I did. And I was so humbled by what Dick said. At the time, you know, I was nervous and scared because this was like a make or break me. If I didn't make it in this area, then I was most definitely not. I was looking at maybe a different career. But with Dick's push and what I did, there's a lot of great guys there. Nacho Barrera was there. I mean, what a great guy. I mean, there's so much talent in this area. I was very lucky and very fortunate to be in this area at this time.
Alan, Indiana, it was sort of in a transitional period at that point because the WWF had taken over the TV there. They had to change channels. A lot of the older wrestlers were still on top, and then they had a new crop of really young talent, but they didn't really have that middle ground with guys that had been around for 8 to 10 years that were still relatively young. You were either someone that had been there for 25, 30 years where you were starting out. When you were in the Indiana territory, did you kind of get that sense that it was different in that aspect from other territories you visited? Or in the moment, did you not really see that was happening?
At the time, I thought the territory was expanding and growing because we would travel up to Chicago and do shows throughout northern Indiana and middle Indiana. It was just a wonderful time, and we went to Ohio and Illinois and Michigan, and I just knew it was a great time to be where I was at. And I was learning.
Now, obviously, like I said, you did team with Bruiser, but you also had a pretty good singles run in your career. Did you personally have any preference as far as it went from tag teams to singles?
Actually, no, I didn't. I enjoyed both because it's a different learning process with being a single and the tag team. And, of course, you know, Dick was going to be put over no matter what. And, you know, I was going to take the heat, which was fine with me because I had to learn how to take heat in the ring. And then, of course, with him being us being baby faces, he would do the ultimate comeback. And then I would join him, and then we would take the course of action and, of course, win. And I was very humbled by that. Dick, I learned so much from him. What a great guy. You know, he had a gruff voice, but very strong, very strong. He mentored me like a father. I put you that way. He was like a dad to me. My mom and dad would be at the ringside and watch, but after the match was over with, he would take me kind of under his wing and say, and give me pointers, son, you need to do this, you need to do that, and do an interview. And, you know, I never actually was in front of the first time I was in front of the camera was in Memphis with Lance Russell. And I was so nervous, you know, because I had never been in front of a camera before. And if anybody knows me, I have I have sort of a stuttering problem I always had ever since I was a little boy. And words have a tendency, I can't pronounce some of the words, and I get very nervous. So I have to rethink other words that I want to come out. It's hard for me, especially getting in front of the camera, being a first-timer. And Dick really, he taught me a lot, how to get in front of the camera, how to put the other opponent over while putting yourself over as well. I mean, I learned so much from the man. He's a professional without a doubt. Love him.
You say that Dick the Bruiser was like a father to you, and I'm sure that was true for a lot of the guys in that territory, but Dick also had members of his actual family in that territory with him. He had his son Carl wrestling as Leroy Redbone. He had a few son-in-laws over the years that worked the territory. Sal Creechman, the manager, was actually Dick's son-in-law. Spike Huber was Dick's son-in-law. The Golden Lion, who now wrestles as Dick the Bruiser Jr., is his son-in-law, even though he looks more like Dick's actual son than Dick's actual son did. Did you get to work a lot with Dick's actual family?
Yes, I did. It was fantastic. Actually, I'm glad you mentioned Spike, because Spike is the one who I met in Memphis, and he was working that territory at the same time I was. And if you recall, that was the same era that Jerry Lawler was going around with Andy Kaufman. So I really got into the business when it was exciting and brand new, and I got to meet a lot of guys in the locker room, like Buddy Landell. You know, I never had a pair of wrestling boots in my life, and I was in Nashville, Tennessee, and Buddy Landell provided me my first pair of wrestling boots. I'll never forget that. Rest in peace, Buddy. He was a great guy. And Spike Huber, when Jerry told me it was time for me to expand my horizons and learn more from the different areas of aspect of the ring, Spike was in the dressing room with me and said, "Jeff, you know, my father-in-law is Dick the Bruiser, and he owns a territory in Indianapolis. Why don't you go up there?" So he gave me his phone number. I made a phone call, and next thing you know, I was out of Memphis, and I was in Indianapolis. And it was all because of Spike. And then I met, Redbone. What a great guy. He was a wonderful worker. I couldn't say enough great things about him as well. So even though his family was there, everybody put everybody over. Nobody had any, jealousy, because his family was just wonderful people. And that's what kind of person Dick was. He was just a wonderful person.
Like I said at the beginning of the show, you later went on to be the original Lord Humongous. That was a completely different gimmick for you that you did. Whose idea was it initially for you to be Lord Humongous?
Well, that's another story. I was working up in Chicago, Dick the Bruiser and Vern Gagne, that group. And I was learning, and then my friend Austin Idol and Jerry Lawler called me, because I still had their phone numbers, and they called me, and they said, "Jeff, we got this idea. We want you to be this guy named Lord Humongous, and we'll send you some photographs and tell you how we think that you should be able to portray this monster type of figure in the ring." And they knew my height, and they said, "Listen, you don't enter the ring like a normal human being. You enter the ring by stepping over the top rope." And that's what, like, Andre the Giant did. All the tall wrestlers did. They kind of stepped over the top rope. And I just kind of – little things like that, you know. Austin – so he called me, and we worked out the details. And with Jerry Lawler's blessings, I showed up in Continental Wrestling with Ron Fuller and Bob Armstrong. And what a great group of individuals they were. So I left Memphis, and I went to Indianapolis with Dick, and then I appeared in the Continental Wrestling as Lord Humongous with Ron Fuller and his group.
Now, obviously, Lord Humongous was different than what you were doing before in Memphis and Indianapolis, so you had to have a different look, different set of gear and so forth. I'm sure you had a few sets of gear over the course of your wrestling days. What was the favorite gear that you had that you most liked to wear to the ring?
Probably the hockey mask. You know, that's the thing. When I it took quite a while to get all my gear together. I had to order a pair of boots. I don't know if you're familiar with Bill Asher or not. His father at the time had a wrestling boot store in Arkansas. So I had to order a pair of boots, and that took, you know, probably 6 weeks to order my boots. And then I had to order the outfit and get that fixed and made. And at the time, my, you know, my mom was a seamstress, and she helped put together the outfit for me. One of the first ones I actually wore, my mom actually put it together for me. And then when I got down to Pensacola, when I first started to wrestle as Humongous, we kind of tweaked it and put fur on the sides of the costume, and we put fur around my boots, sort of make it more of a monster type of character. And I put the fur around my neck. And what Austin had suggested, you know, it makes sense today because a lot of people still think I was bald or shaved my head. I took stockings and I put a stocking over my head to kind of help conceal my identity. And I put the hockey mask over the stocking, so it made it look like I was shaved my head or bald. And people to this day still think I was bald or shaved my head. I said, no, I just wore a stocking, you know. But that was the appearance that I portrayed. You know, just another little thing that I did to help portray my gimmick. That's like doing interviews. When I did interviews with Lord Humongous, I never spoke. I talked with my eyes. And I had other people talking for me, like Sir Oliver Humperdinck. I had a lot of individuals. Ron Fuller talked for me. Arn Anderson was a great guy. What a mind of wrestling he has, Arn Anderson. What a great guy. Jerry Stubbs. It was an amazing time in my life. You know, Bob Armstrong, God rest his soul. You know, rest in peace, Bobby. What a great guy he was. Everybody, when I was in the business, was there to help me. And everybody was helping one another to get better. Because as we got better and grew, then we of course, attract more fans. And that was all what it's all about.
Absolutely it is. When you decided to step away, they replaced you as Lord Humongous with a very young Sid. Did you ever watch what Sid was doing as Lord Humongous and have an opinion on how he was doing the gimmick as opposed to how you were doing it?
I did observe some of his portrayals of Humongous. You know, he stepped into a character that was established and as a monster, and he kind of, in my opinion, ruined it. He didn't do what the character that I had portrayed did. He kind of, and if you talk to a lot of different people, a lot of people, well, Sid was Humongous, but I was before him. But he, in my opinion, he didn't portray the gimmick in which it should have been portrayed. And I had a lot of guys from a lot of boys tell me that several times that he didn't protect the gimmick. He didn't know how to work the gimmick. He was very. I don't know if you're familiar with the phrase potato. He made a lot of potatoes in the ring. Are you following me? What I'm saying?
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yes, sir.
Now, when Sid broke into the business, had you ever directly worked with him, or had you never actually worked with him and just knew him from when he took over Lord Humongous?
Yeah, I never met the man. I just know that whoever it was gave him the portrayal of Humongous, but he didn't study or actually try to learn how Humongous should have been. He just took it up on his own and in my opinion, did a crappy job.
Now, as a big man yourself, when you look at the landscape of wrestling, whether it is the time that you were active before you got into the business or after you got out of the business, who would you say would be some of the very best big men that wrestling has seen?
That I wrestled with? To help me out, one of them, without a doubt, would be Arn Anderson, Ric Flair. I really had a great run with Jake the Snake Roberts, Ted DiBiase, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Terry Taylor, Butch Reed. I had a lot of great people that I to put my finger on one individual. Probably because I had a good run-in with Jake, and he and I are really good friends to this day, and God bless him, too. It'd probably be Jake Roberts.
Not a bad choice at all. One of the things that has been around for quite a while now, and it's changed a lot in the last several years, but that is the Cauliflower Alley Club. It has gone from like more of a private event for people that were in the wrestling industry to being for anybody that wants to attend the event. There's the reunion aspect of it, but it's also sort of a combination reunion and convention, basically. Do you ever attend the CAC meetings?
No, actually, I do not. I do, as far as like the reunions, when I get invited, I will go. Like I have an invitation to an autograph signing in Albany, New York, December 4th and 5th. And John Nord, the Barbarian. I don't know if you remember him or not. He and I had a little run-in with Jake the Snake in Mid-South. He and I are going up to Albany that weekend and do some autograph signing. But I actually don't attend the conferences or their meetings.
All right.
I wish I did. I wish I did. Because I really enjoy the business of wrestling.
In the era where you wrestled, one of the big things that wrestlers had as a way to get exposure was Pro Wrestling Illustrated. And a lot of fans got whatever knowledge that they got of the wrestling world from PWI because in that era, you just didn't have access to wrestling outside of your home territory very much, so PWI would fill in fans about what was happening all over the country and expose fans to new wrestlers that they may not have seen, so when they eventually came to their territory, they already had sort of a familiarization on what they were about. Did you get a lot of coverage out of PWI and some of the other magazines when you were active in your career?
Actually, I had a few articles in the wrestling magazines, but I don't think I had any as Jeff Van Kemp, because I started out as Jeff Van Kemp, the football player. And I don't think I was in any of the magazines at that time because I was relatively unknown. My career really took off like a shooting star when I was in Continental with Lord Humongous, with Ron Fuller and that group. The way they pushed me, and it was how what Barb Armstrong did for me in my career, and Austin Idol, and Poor Chop Cash, you know, all those guys. I mean, I can't say enough. Boomer and Lynch, and I want to say a shout out too, if I could, to a lot of people helped me out that was behind the scenes. Pat Rose. What a great guy he was, and Randy Rose, and Ricky and Robert Gibson, and his brother, God rest his soul, he helped me out tremendously. Robert, in the Memphis area when I first started, I mean, he what a great guy. I mean, there's so many guys now that I know that are gone, and I miss them. You know, it was a wonderful time in my life and great memories.
Now, obviously, one of the dangers of being a professional wrestler is you're going to have the occasional injury. It's just part of the business, being a physical contact sport like it is. Accidents happen all the time. Did you have very many injuries from your wrestling days?
Yeah, the only injury that I can say that I actually sustained was I was in Jackson, Mississippi. I'll never forget it. Jake the Snake and John Nord the Barbarian was in the ring wrestling. At a certain time, I was to exit the dressing room and rush the ring, and then John and I would tag team Jake and leave him in a pool of blood in the middle of the ring. And it was at the fairgrounds, and I'll never forget it. The place was packed. It was people hanging off the rafters. It was so many people at this fairgrounds watching us. And I literally had a police escort, and I could not leave the ring. I had so many people rush the ring, and they were so mad and angry with me. It was unbelievable. And as I was walking back to the ring, I got stabbed.
Ouch. That is never a good day at the office when you get stabbed.
I got stabbed in the right hand, where somebody reached out with a knife. I had no clue who it was, and sliced my hand. I had to go. Actually, after I got back to the dressing room, I wrapped it up with a towel. I didn't actually know I was bleeding until people said, "Jeff, you're bleeding." So I got my wrapped my hand in a towel and put my sweats on. I couldn't even get out of my character. So I went to actually my friend Dr. Steve Williams, God rest his soul. He and I were really good friends. We traveled a lot together. And at the time, Rick Steiner, I don't know if you remember Rick, Rob Rick Steiner, the Steiner brothers. Anyway, we all traveled together, and we drove to Vicksburg. We left Jackson, Mississippi, and drove to Vicksburg, Steve did, and went to the hospital in Vicksburg and got sewed up.
Wow. Well, at this point in the show, we have a game we like to play called Word Association. I'll throw out the names of some people that you most likely have come across in your career, and the first word or two that pops to your mind is the answer. Are you prepared for a round of Word Association?
Sure. We'll try it. We'll give it a go.
All right. Here we go. First name, Bill Watts.
Bill Watts, the owner of the territory of Mid-South. Great guy. I've been my first video, Bill Watts.
Bobo Brazil.
Oh, my gosh. Bobo Brazil. God rest his soul. He was a wonderful guy. I learned a lot from him from Indiana. what a wonderful guy. I mean, they would say he had so much talent. It was unbelievable. What a great guy.
Tommy Gilbert.
Tommy Gilbert, you know, Tommy, he was a referee most of the time when I was wrestling. I didn't actually work with him, but he was a referee in the ring in Memphis and in Mid-South. Oh, Tommy.
Dr. Jerry Graham Jr.
Dr. Jerry Graham. Boy, I tell you what, I loved him to death. He had a lot of connections with the WWF at the time. And he was trying to give me some information about how what's the next steps. And what a great guy. I understand he played Santa Claus a lot up in Indiana.
I bet he did. Ron Fuller.
Oh, I can't say enough about the Tennessee Stud. He's a great guy. Also, he wrote a book. He's an author, and what a wonderful guy. Love him to death.
Absolutely. I believe the name of the book is Brutus.
Yeah, Brutus.
All right, next name is his brother Rob.
You need to get it. It's a great book.
Next one is Rob Fuller, his brother.
Rob Fuller, let me tell you something. He's a great guy. He just didn't have the mind as Ron. But Robert was a great guy and a great storyteller, and what a great worker he was in the ring.
David McLean.
The old colonel. Who's that, I'm sorry?
David McLean.
McLean. I can't remember. I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. He was the interviewer for Dick the Bruiser and then went on to promoter of Glow.
He was. I remember. Yeah, you had to throw my memory off for a minute. I'm sorry about that. Yeah, he was a great guy. He was a great interviewer. And actually, he's the one who did a lot of promotion with the gimmicks that we passed out, koozies and pitchers, and he did a lot of that for us.
Gordon Solie,
boy, what a great interviewer he was with Continental. I know he was with Atlanta, but he was wonderful. I didn't really get to. I mean, I was there, but he didn't get to really interview me because of my gimmick. I didn't talk. I had a guy named Saul Creechman do the talking for me, and then Ron Fuller and Porchop Cash and Arn Anderson. What a professional.
Bruce Cholak.
You got to help me out with that one, Al. Torak.
He was one of the older guys that was around Dick the Bruiser's great big guy that had been there forever.
I honestly can't remember. I apologize.
Oh, not a problem at all. Next name, Nature Boy Ric Flair.
What a partier. He was a great guy. He showed me a lot in the ring. You know, I wrestled with him in Birmingham and again in Montgomery, Alabama. He taught me a lot. And actually, I beat Rick for the belt in Birmingham. And then he got it back in Montgomery.
Kevin Sullivan.
Wow, that's a name I haven't heard in a long time. What a great guy, right? Mid-South.
He was everywhere, yeah. I believe you probably crossed paths in Continental.
Yeah, Continental, Mid-South, you name it. Wow. What a great
final
mind.
Name on the list is Bill Dundee.
Oh, superstar Bill Dundee. You know, he's an awesome individual who helped me out a lot in Memphis, gave me a lot of pointers, taught me and pointed me in the right direction, and actually he was running the territory in Charlotte at the time. He was in Mid-South and then Charlotte, and he wanted me to be, instead of going to Mid-South, he wanted me to go show up in Charlotte, show what a Lord Humongous. And I told him, well, let me go to Bill Watts first, and then we'll see how it goes, and we'll make that determination later on, which didn't actually happen. But what a great guy Bill Dundee is. Wow.
All right, well, that concludes word association. Now, wrestling in the last 20 years or so has definitely become a different animal. One of the things that promotions and wrestlers, referees, managers, anything having to do with wrestling has really relied heavily upon is social media. It also has helped a lot of wrestlers that maybe stepped away from the business come back to it in some way. You see a lot of people reconnect via social media, and they start doing appearances and autograph signings. Sometimes they even get back in the ring if they get the right social media contacts. What do you think of the way that social media has really changed the landscape of professional wrestling?
Without a doubt, it certainly has. It's a good thing, and also it could be distributed as bad. You know, when I first started out, and you was a perfect example, talking about different territories, a lot of, like the magazines, only way people got their information about wrestlers was from the magazines and in the TV in their territory. Now it's social media. You can go from everywhere. So you have to really be careful what you say and do. Do the best job you know how. And I think social media is a good thing. I mean, that's how, no offense, that's how a lot of people have reconnected with me on Facebook and to let me know about, because I went to Charlotte a few months ago for autograph signing, and I'm going to Albany in 1st of December. And I don't know, Ron Fuller is having, I think, a autograph thing next year in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It's a great time for, like, myself to get to rekindle some of the old relationships that I had when we were working full-time together.
You say a lot of people reconnected with you via social media. Who is the most surprising person that reached out to you to reconnect on social media that you may not have ever thought you'd see or hear from again in your life?
You know, that's a good question. I had, you like Jake the Snake. I have not talked to Jake in years. And then he and I kind of reconnected at a reunion in Alabama with Dennis Gale. What a great guy. And we reconnected with social media. We went fishing a couple years ago up in Wisconsin together. Spent a week just rehashing our, you know, and rekindling our relationship. And I went to Dallas this past May to go fishing with him. And it's just little things like that. It means a lot to me, like Arn Anderson, Ron Fuller. But I really appreciate the camaraderie we have with Jake the Snake. I'm trying to reach out to Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Ted DiBiase as well, but I think sometimes it's kind of hard for them to open up because they're so busy.
That they are, and I believe Hacksaw Duggan just recently had cancer surgery, so he's probably even busier than he normally is right now.
Yeah, thank God. I hope everything's okay with him. It's like Jimmy Hines, you know, one of the Fantastics. Jimmy and I reconnected again, and I know he lives up in Ohio, and God bless him. And you know, I miss his partner, Tommy Rogers, who passed away a few years ago. There's just so many great people that I've had a working relationship with that's no longer with us, and I just miss those days.
You talked a lot about working with Jake Roberts, and you thought he was one of the better big men in the business. He, to this day, is still on national television as a manager with All Elite Wrestling. He's been in the business for closing in on 50 years. Did you think when you were working with Jake the Snake in Mid-South that he would still be at this stage in his life?
Yeah, well, Jake is part of his family, you know. I'm with his father, you know, I don't want to say a whole lot with that, but, you know, his brother and his sister, they were all, it's a big family business. I knew Jake would be around in a long time because he was just a great guy. I've learned a lot from him.
One of the parts of pro wrestling that has changed a lot since you were active is women's wrestling. When you were still active as a full-time wrestler, women's wrestling was largely a novelty part of the show, and they would have one match at the most as far as women went. In the last 5 or 6 years, women's wrestling has, on the national level, taken off, and you see 3 or 4 matches of women's wrestling on a given Monday Night Raw or AEW Dynamite, and a lot of times the women's matches headline the pay-per-views. What did you think of women's wrestling when you were a full-time wrestler, and has that feeling changed looking at wrestling in today's landscape?
You know, today's women's wrestling is totally different than the one when I was back in the, you know, mid-80s. I did off and on for the last 30-plus years. You know, the women today are just, might as well, they're athletes. I mean, they're very talented. I'm not saying they weren't talented or athletes back then, but today, good Lord, I mean, they're doing everything men are doing in the ring, and sometimes even more. I mean, they're very agile and athletic and jumping around and with a lot of energy. I mean, I didn't really see that back when I was wrestling. Most of the women that was in the ring were associated was managers or like a Dark Journey, you know, or and some other ladies. They were great girls, but they didn't really actually go out there and wrestle. My wife today.
When you were still full-time in the business, did you have any one female wrestler that you most enjoyed watching, or was the skill level pretty much consistent through all of them, would you say?
I think the skill level was consistent with all the ladies at the period of time. It's not like watching the ladies today. It's totally different. I mean, it's kind of hard to explain. These ladies today they're athletes. It's simple. I mean, I'm not saying they weren't athletes back in the 80s, but today is like they're all over the place. You know what I'm saying? It's amazing to watch them and things they can do, you know?
Now, also, when you were a full-time wrestler, one of the novelty parts of the business was midget wrestling. You don't see very much at all with the big national touring companies, but there still are a few all-midget wrestling promotions that tour around the country. Your standard independent show doesn't really have midget wrestling on it to speak of at all anymore, but there are some all-midget shows still out there, so fans can still see that. What did you think of that part of wrestling?
I thought it was very enjoyable to watch. I know they're just as talented as the older, you know, the bigger guys. They're just on a smaller level, but they were just as talented and athletic and skilled. It's just a shame they didn't get the push that the you know, like guys like my size did, but. I mean, you know, you got to go where the money's at, and promoters knew that they could push these, you know, the midgets or ladies wrestling, but they knew that at the time in this period in our lives that it was the guys who were actually, you know, pulling in the draw.
Your time in pro wrestling was relatively short as far as being full-time active in it. There's usually other roles that wrestlers will gravitate towards when they decide to not be a full-time wrestler. We see a lot of guys transition to manager, announcers, bookers, promoters. There's a lot of roles in wrestling that guys will usually try before they totally get out of the business. You were one of the rare ones, I think, just got out and didn't try any of the other roles. Was there ever any thought to you as far as doing something like promoting or announcing or anything of that nature?
You know, that's a really good question. When I got out of it, I wanted to start a family. I was relatively newlywed, and I know that we'd wrestle 7 days a week, twice on Saturdays and Sundays. There's no way that I could possibly start a family with the travels and arrangements I was doing at the time. So I made a choice to give it up. And, you know, I studied law enforcement at the University of Louisville. You know, I got my degree, criminal justice, from Troy University in Adulton, Alabama. And I have a minor in social studies and an associate's degree in general education. So I wanted to get in law enforcement, and I came back and started living in Pensacola, and I joined the Pensacola Police Department back in 86. So that's the direction I chose.
Around the time that you were getting out of the business, the WWF was introducing a performer there by the name of the Big Boss Man, who was a corrections officer. He legitimately had been a corrections officer before getting into wrestling. Seeing as that was your next career path, did you have any opinions on the Big Boss Man?
You know, no, actually I met him. He was a super nice guy, and I was already in law enforcement when I met him at one of the shows in Pensacola. Go backstage and met all the guys I used to work with. And my at the time my son was born, and I went backstage with him, and he was a great guy, all of them. What a wonderful person.
He was one of the primary guys that did a law enforcement gimmick, but there were a few others. You had the Trooper in the late days of the AWA. There was the State Patrol of Buddy Lee Parker and Lieutenant James Earl Wright in WCW. There were a few more over the years. Did you see anyone in wrestling that did a law enforcement gimmick that you wish you could have done?
No, sir. I didn't think about that. You know, I just, at the time I got in law enforcement and that's where I was at. And every once in a while they would call me to do a matchup in, like, say, Birmingham or in Alabama somewhere. And I would bring out my dust off my old gimmick and put it on and go wrestle, you know, the Freebirds. God rest his soul. Hang on, I'm losing. I can't think. Gordy.
Terry Gordy.
Yeah, what a great guy he was. Toward the end, I mean, I think I wrestled him, and 3 weeks later, he passed away.
His daughter recently got into professional wrestling, and she seems to be doing very, very well for herself.
That's awesome. Congratulations. Kudos to her.
Well, we're down to the final few minutes of the show, and I want to make sure that you have ample time. If you have anything in closing that you want to say to the listeners and plug and promote anything and everything you would like, social media, any upcoming appearances, your favorite haberdashery, anything that you would like, floor is all yours.
Okay, well, you can contact me. I also sell hockey masks and these Lord Humongous dolls and photographs. You can get me on Facebook, Jeff Van Camp, and PM me, and I'll get in touch with you. And I've been selling a lot of my gimmicks on through Facebook. And thank you so much for allowing me to be part of your show. Thank you for everything.
It was definitely our pleasure to have you on here today. We definitely enjoyed it very, very much. Hopefully we will get the opportunity to have you back on the show in the near future.
That's awesome. I appreciate it. I would love to be back.
All right. Definitely.
And for everybody out there, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
I said thank you so
you
much.
And all the rest of the upcoming holidays as well.
Yes,
fans,
sir.
If you have not done so, get on your YouTube, look up Lord Humongous and Jeff Van Camp. Great, great big man wrestler. I think you will enjoy his work. Always great to talk to someone that passed through the Memphis and the Indianapolis territories on our show. Don't forget, you can find me if you're looking for some pro wrestling and you want to see Sign Guy tonight. I will be at the KI Martial Arts Center in South Hill, Washington for Northwest Pro. And then tomorrow night, you can find me at the Key Peninsula Civic Center once again for Northwest Pro. So come out, support that. If you have an independent anywhere near you, get out there and support that. Also, I believe I forgot to mention tomorrow night, Defy Wrestling in Seattle, Washington. The Briscoe Brothers of Ring of Honor will be there. So that's a huge deal. Make sure you go buy a ticket if they have any left, or come find me in the next county over for Northwest Pro. But get out there, support your local independents. We will be back with you Sunday afternoon. We have a great guest for you Sunday named Jason Stone, who is a referee and a former promoter. And then 1 week from today, we have out of the great state of North Carolina, a member of the Gouge roster, Jacob Hammermeyer. So make sure you tune in with us for those shows. Everybody continue to be safe out there, and we will talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jason, for allowing me to be here.
Thank you.
Have a great night, buddy.
Could be the way you wanted me to be, but you're leaving and I miss you, you know. You could be the mountain, I could be the sea, 'cause I've been tearing us apart and miss you. Talking in sleep when you're all alone, waiting on me to come back home. I can see you walking far away, I don't know why, so I'll just wait. I'll just wait. Half a man you needed, one is whole, but I was given everything 'cause I miss you, you know. You're talking in your sleep when you're all alone, waiting on me to come back home. I can see you walking far away, I don't know how, I believe in you.